broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Welcome to our podcast, one of the early ones for 2025. Certainly glad to have all of you in my listening audience. I told my grandkids over Christmas break that I had followers. And they said, "You don't even know what that means, Mima," which is my name. I said, "Well, okay, maybe I don't. But I have people who routinely listen to the podcast." Oh, we didn't think you even knew how to turn your computer on, is basically what they told me. So thanks to my listening audience for paying attention to this. I think you're going to like this program today. So let's get started with our usual approach, which is what's in my mailbox. So what's in my mailbox is kind of interesting because I thought we knew this, you know, and maybe it's a good thing people actually ask. So the question was, how long do we have upon admission to a hospital to document the presence of deep tissue pressure injury? Is it the time that we have to do the hospital admission, which is on my shift, or do we have longer than that? And I thought, wow, where have you been? Well, maybe you're new to the business of wound care, but what we know is that deep tissue injury does not appear for up to 48 hours. And some of that depends on how much flesh there is. So really thin people will show purple tissue sooner than 48 hours. And really heavy people, it takes a little longer. So what we talk about is pressure to purple is 48 hours. And if a person comes in with a deep tissue injury that's evolving at the time of admission, it won't be visible in your assessment of that patient when they walk in your door. So to kind of add to that, hopefully if you're getting the NPIAP push, you know, the email push today, you saw that there's a new quiz up and it's on what makes skin turn purple. So I'd encourage you to give it a shot. I took the test today just to make sure I still knew the answers from when I wrote it last month. I got them all correct, which I guess is a good thing. So on to the podcast. We're going to combine today two areas of practice that are not always combined. And I know one of the things you're going to hear from my two guests is the fact that you need to find out what's regulated or legislated in your state about safe patient handling. So here's what we're going to combine. We're going to combine prevention of pressure injuries, of course, you knew that, right? And something called safe patient handling. And you may wonder, how did we pick this topic? Well, let me tell you that up to 80% of operating room nurses suffer with shoulder, upper back, and neck injury from moving people that are unconscious off and on the OR table. Not quite that high in regular staff nurses, but rates are high in general in nurses and nurses' aides, reaching 40 to 50% of our staff that we're short of, right? We're short of nurses and we don't want them all on low impact duty because they're injured. We need to keep them safe. So that's how we're gonna put this together. And I think you can appreciate how difficult it would be to move a bariatric patient into an offloaded position. But I want you to expand your thinking that all patients should be moved correctly, not just the bariatric patient. You would want to be moved correctly if you were a patient. So let me introduce my two guests for today. A longtime friend of mine, Charlotte Lisco, has joined us. And once I introduce Kelly, I'll come back and let the two of them introduce themselves. And Kelly Moed is a new friend of mine. So Charlotte's out in California and Kelly's on the East Coast in New Jersey and New York. And they're joining me here in Omaha, Nebraska to do this podcast. So Charlotte, welcome to the podcast. And please tell the audience a little bit about yourself because there may be people who don't know you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Black, and thank you so much for this opportunity, and I'm honored to be here. Like said, my name is Charlotte Lisco. I'm a wound, ostomy, and continence nurse. I live in the Inland Empire in Southern California. I work for a health maintenance organization here on the West Coast, and I have for about 27 years now. I graduated from MD Anderson in 2005 and have been championing pressure injury prevention since its inception. And my passion is pressure injury prevention. And that's what we're here to talk about today and how it has been very much a part of safe patient handling and vice versa for many years now.
Thank you, Charlotte. And I have Kelly Moet joining us. Kelly, please introduce yourself.
So I'm Kelly Moed. I'm an RN for just 40 years. I graduated 40 years ago, and I've spent my entire career working in the hospital setting in New York City for a very large hospital system. And I became very interested in safe patient handling and mobility when I became a nurse educator. And I've been a nurse educator for 30 years. So I've been interested in safe patient handling and built mobility for 30 years. And I became certified through the Association of Safe Patient Handling Professionals back in 2014. And I've been a certified nurse educator since 1994. And I have helped New York State to get legislation which requires hospitals and long-term care facilities, as well as Article 28s, to have a safe patient handling and mobility program. I didn't do it by myself. I did it with a group, but it was actually, it started out as my graduate school research utilization project. I've always felt that healthcare workers need to take care of their own safety. When I first started in my career in the 80s, I had patients that were infected with HIV, and at the time we didn't know what it was, and they told us not to wear gloves, and all of a sudden we're wearing gloves, and I said, you know what? We need to own this. We need to think about what our own protection is. Same thing happened with chemo. Now we have pharmacists preparing chemo under hoods. I said, you know what? I want to help healthcare workers, and that's what my mission, my passion has been, is to get the word out. And I still feel like it's an uphill battle. So I am definitely appreciating this opportunity to have this discussion so we could spread the word that safe patient handling is something that all healthcare workers are entitled to.
Thank you, Kelly. Very good. So, Charlotte and Kelly, both of you, let me start with Charlotte. I think in general, the audience understands pressure injury prevention. And you and I have talked about this, that being obese, being overweight, in fact, is not considered protective for pressure injuries. We cannot assume that a patient, just because they're obese or overweight, doesn't have a risk. But how do you, when you work with your nurses, how do you demonstrate pressure injury prevention and safe patient handling in the bariatric patient? And I have to ask you too, your back and shoulders are holding up, I hope. So I know, knowing you, you demonstrate it. So I'm going to assume that you haven't injured yourself in the process. But tell the audience, how do you marry those two?
Great question, Joyce. Safe patient handling and pressure injury prevention in bariatric patients, I think that's a very quick misunderstanding is that safe patient handling only encompasses those patients that are bariatric, when really it truly encompasses all patients, all movements, and all nurse-patient interactions. Trying to teach pressure injury prevention in bariatric patients can be a challenge because they are just at risk, as our cachectic, malnourished 99-year-old grandmother with bony prominences sticking out at every point. And so, teaching them to truly offload to get the pressure off that sacral area can be a challenge because products aren't always built to offload somebody who's weighing 500, 600 pounds. To get a 30-degree sideline position on a wedge is difficult. And so, we are looking at our products, whether it be an overhead lift, a sling, Hoyer lifts of the days of old, to move these patients and to be able to truly offload, but to allow us to do skin checks and get in there and see. And so how do we teach that? It's case by case. It's on the spot. It's getting nurses to look at all of the pressure injury prevention interventions and tools that we have, and then implementing the right products to prevent from pressure injuries, but to also protect the nurse's joints and the patient. At the same time, we have to identify the right tools, and that's where sometimes we get in trouble. With bariatric patients, we're lucky because we can We know what their weight limit is. We can assign them to a room that maybe has an overhead lift and a sling where we have these products. And I think we're a little bit better prepared for safe patient handling for larger patients. But when it comes to our everyday patients, we get busy, we get moving, and we don't think about using slings and lifts and overhead hoyers and things like that to move these patients. And it feel like that's where our nurses are getting injured and we're missing key opportunities. We're able to provide pressure injury prevention, but are we truly handling those patients safely and handling ourselves? I'm fortunate my back and my shoulders are holding up, but I've been watching this develop over the course of 20 years now.
Charlotte, you bring up a great point in that it's probably more likely where you don't expect to need safe patient handling equipment or techniques. Kelly, I think some of your practice has been involved with state regulations and getting the rules in place for hospitals to follow on safe patient handling. Can you share a little bit about what that experience was like?
Sure. Back in 2005, 2006, I was very busy with my graduate school project, which was safe patient handling and mobility implementation. And I reached out to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in New York, and they put me in touch with other clinicians who were physical therapists, occupational therapists, and a few RNs through the VA system. And they were working on implementation of safe patient handling. So then I got involved with the group, which was called the Zero Lift Task Force in New York. And together we worked through OSHA grants. We had a Susan Harwood OSHA grant, went around, did some education on this hazard for healthcare workers. It was for frontline staff, it was for leadership. And we put together teams or committees for safe patient handling at individual sites. And then we kept working, going up to Albany, New York, and working with legislators to see how we could get this implemented as a law. And in 2014, we had the New York State Safe Patient Handling Act was passed. And then as part of that act, it required hospitals, long-term care facilities, Article 28, to all implement a program which included a committee. And the committee has two co-chairs. One would be a non-managerial person, and one would be a manager or an administrator. And this way, we are always being in touch with what's going on in the front line. The New York State law requires that there's equipment available, training is done initially and annually, and that all incidents, anytime a staff member becomes injured, that it's investigated and that there's remediation. That something needs to be done. And the program is looked at annually to see if there are any changes that need to be done. So really proud of that. And I was part of the New York State work group, which helped to educate the rest of the state on what exactly this was. But here we are, it's more than 10 years since the law has been passed. But sadly, one missing piece to this, which I really wanted to get across, like federally, is that safe patient handling and mobility is not only not a federal law, but it's not required in the curriculum for nursing school. It's still in our textbooks. We still see proper body mechanics and some use of assistive devices. It's sad that we recognize that these injury rates are high, and yet it's not being taught in the schools. So I'm working closely with a task force through the Association of Safe Patient Handling Professionals. And what we're doing, we've got a white paper that's available. Anyone can look at it. It's on the website for the Association of Safe Patient Handling and Professionals, public access. And it talks about the need for curriculum for safe patient handling for RNs, radiology techs, nurses' aides, PTs, OT. You know, it's just the whole gamut. Anyone that puts hands on patients should be. Have this in their basic training because right now it's up to facilities. And facilities are the ones that at this point in time can help the staff. They can help reduce their injuries. And let's think about how healthcare is today. We cannot afford to lose another seasoned person. We need to protect the staff that we have. In retaining them, we're going to have better patient outcomes. We have a lot of new staff, and we need to keep retaining the staff. We don't want to have that revolving door where staff keeps leaving. We want them to feel that they can stay at the bedside, that they don't have to take a remote job or somewhere else. I know I've spun it into a whole other thing, but honestly, right at this point, healthcare workers are, we need to get this word out. That's why I'm excited about today, because it's something that I've been trying to do this uphill battle, and I'm so excited that I was invited to this discussion, and I'm hoping that your followers, I know Joyce, you have followers, that they will listen and demand that they, just like they need a pair of gloves, they need to have safe patient handling and mobility equipment or devices.
Thank you, Kelly. That's a great summary for the significance of this. And congratulations on all the work that you've done. My back appreciates you. So, Charlotte, one of the problems that I've seen in hospitals is that there's a committee on pressure injury prevention, and then there's a committee on infection, and there's one on falls, and now there's one on safe patient handling. And so sometimes it's like a whack-a-mole game, where the fall rate goes up and everybody is attacking the fall rate. And then they go, oh, what, wait a minute, we got the falls down, but now the pressure injury rates are up. So how have you handled that in your systems? There's got to be a better way to do this so we don't beat one problem down and then another one pops up.
Excellent question, and a daily challenge in the acute care world of WFC nursing because one initiative definitely runs into another initiative. And when I first had the opportunity to meet Kelly, we were in a very casual setting like this, just chatting. And I go back to the analogy, and some of you may not remember the old days of the Reese's peanut butter cup commercial where you had your chocolate and you had your peanut butter. So I had my pressure injury prevention. Kelly had her safe patient handling. And we got to chatting, and I quickly realized, well, hey, you've dipped your safe patient handling into my pressure injury prevention. And realizing that I've dipped my pressure injury prevention into safe patient handling. And it is a challenge to these conflicting initiatives. And thinking back to very early days, safe patient handling and pressure injury prevention have kind of been running parallel together. And we're just now starting to cross each other's paths. I think back to my early days of trying to get pressure injury prevention products into the hospital. And we know that there's not a lot of reimbursement for prevention. So getting facilities to buy into prevention was very tricky back in 2010, 2011. And we got early products like turning and positioning tools that were initially intended for offloading the sacrum with the wedges and preventing pressure injuries. I had a hard time selling that product to my facility because we weren't really having sacral pressure injuries at that time. We were turning, we were using static air overlays, we were doing okay, but I knew I needed this sheet that helped move patients and wedges that truly offloaded. And I wasn't going to gain any momentum in my pressure injury prevention realm. So I had this brainchild of an idea and I reached out to my workplace safety initiative team. And that's where I was able to gain momentum with some of the early pressure injury prevention devices that were truly marrying pressure injury prevention and safe patient handling. These devices have now given us the ease to pull patients, boost patients, turn patients, have straps that we can lift and pull across. So we're not putting that strain and stress on our bodies. And that's where I really saw back then pressure injury prevention and safe patient handling. And now trying to guide those interventions and preventions together. And like I said, they've been running parallel for many years. And it's just getting people to have that aha moment, that pressure injury prevention offloading safely and turning safely helps not only the patient, but the staff as well.
Yeah, I think the problem that you're describing, I'm actually glad to realize to hear that it happens in more than the hospitals I deal with. Sometimes I think I don't always see the best practices, but still, it's still a problem. So if you were advising a hospital today because of an elevated rate of staff injury and days off of work, what products, because you brought up the budget, and I think this is going to be an issue in hospitals collectively. So what do you need to outfit a room to make it safe patient handling? Does it have to have an over-the-bed lift? You mentioned products that you can move the patient over in bed without all the fancy equipment, because in my world, we did outfit some rooms with over-the-bed lifts. And the patients who needed them couldn't get into those rooms. So it wasn't a perfect marriage of where the product was, the patient was. So what are the products that you need for safe patient handling?
Wow, there's so many of them. We, working in a state that has very progressive safe patient handling legislation, I'm very fortunate. In the facility I work in, probably 75% of my rooms are equipped with overhead lifts. But let me say this, do we use them every time? No, because we still have challenges of locating slings and staff compliance and things like that. Overhead lifts are great if you have them. There's the basic single patient use items like turning and positioning products that have the ripstop nylon glide sheets that can help you boost and turn the patients. We have airlift devices now out there. There's Cerus Steadies, which are devices that can help sit your patients up and and roll them to the restroom. The amount of safe patient handling devices are unlimited, and Kelly, she's the expert in that. I just know what I've used in my practice that serve as pressure injury prevention devices and safe patient handling devices. Reactive air overlays, we've been using them for years for safe patient handling devices. If we were transferring patients from bed to gurney, we would hyperinflate those, glide them over, deflate them so we had proper immersion envelopment. That's early safe patient handling. So it's just looking at how we're moving the patients with the tools and the devices that we have access to. You don't always need a $10,000 overhead lift if you have good education and other products.
So, do you think that the most common activity by the nurse that leads to injury is either boosting up in bed or lateral movement of the patient in bed? Because I can think we have not had a lot of patients fall when the nurse fell on top of them, but the majority of our back injuries come from boosting in bed, which unfortunately is something that we do sometimes every 2 or 3 hours in repositioning. What's your experience with that?
It's the repetitive motion. It's the constant pulling, pushing, lifting, turning. Literature shows that the highest rate of injuries are in our nursing assistants, our staff that are doing the brunt of the turning, the pushing up, the boosting, the Q2-hour turns for the total care patients, the higher acuity patients, and it's that repetitive motion. I'm going to let Kelly speak to more of the data and statistics on injuries. That's her area of expertise.
Kelly, can you fill us in? What are we seeing at your state level and your national level as far as the amount of injury and who's getting injured and how are they being injured?
So, surprisingly, exactly what you're talking about is this repositioning in the bed, the turning, the boosting is what is currently hurting our staff members. So, when you look at all jobs, all professions, that nurses and nurses aides are consistently in the top 10 of all workers that are becoming injured. So, it's something that we really need to focus on. I don't see why, it's upsetting to me after working for many years with this and knowing that people are getting hurt from turning and repositioning and boosting, and hospitals aren't required to provide these things as if they did, had gloves. It's a protective device. We're protecting the staff from musculoskeletal injuries. And a musculoskeletal injury is not just a backache. We're talking back, shoulders, knees, hips. These are all things that just Charlotte did so eloquently described how, all this pushing and pulling of patients is it's something that's a cumulative injury. And that's definitely been recognized in the literature. And it's something that needs to be addressed. And it's not one crazy thing that a staff member does. It is an accumulative thing. It's something repetitive and exactly what you're talking about, and introducing all of the equipment that Charlotte had suggested, and those devices. That's safe patient handling, is using devices, identifying risky situations, as well as educating staff on how to use these devices, and also how to assess patients for the risk for themselves, how to protect themselves. A lot of times we worry about the patients, but this is something safe patient handling is worrying about. Yes, the patient, but really about the risk to the staff. So, something that I'd like to add to this specifically because we're talking about bed mobility, beds. when you have your specialized beds, they don't even have to just be specialized. When you have beds in a hospital setting, most of them have different bed functions that will help with safe patient handling and mobility. They have turn assist. You could put it on max inflate. See, I find that when you're using devices, safe patient healing devices, and there's the, you know how there's that little dip in the bed when the air loss, you know, and especially in the sacral area. Well, it's actually, we found after investigation of injuries, staff have been digging the patient out of those ditches. So they have to actually pull them out. So a practice that has to be learned is that they have to learn to max inflate the bed to make a firm surface so they're not going against gravity and trying to pull the patient out. So it could be something as simple as that, using the beds to the best of your ability as a staff member. And, you know, and just using any of these friction reducing devices, turning and positioning systems. And then Air Assist is amazing. Air Assist takes the patient's weight and reduces, you know, the force that you're using by 80 to 90%. So it's almost the staff, it's like I've got a lot of wow factor. I always enjoy teaching air-assisted devices because the staff go, whoa, this is amazing. It's like air hockey. My patient has no weight. And then think about it. Instead of using four staff members, you're using two staff members because you're able to do that because you've decreased that load. I don't know. We didn't get to mention it, but the 35 pounds is what the max weight a staff member should be lifting. And you know, if you ask, I've asked staff every time I go to teach a class, they say, oh, I think maybe 100, 125 pounds. That should be the max weight. And bottom line is that NIOSH has the lifting equation. And when looking at healthcare and patient care, it's been drilled down to 35 pounds. Other industries, it's 51 pounds, but in healthcare, because patients are unpredictable, they don't have handles, sometimes they're unstable, and with the staff's always in awkward positions too, thinking about reaching around equipment. And when specifically for wound care, we're really not supposed to reach past the midline of the bed. So think, try to do wound care or even doing an assessment without that reach. So you really need assisted devices.
Oh, thanks. That's great information. I don't believe ever in my career have I taken care of somebody that's 35 pounds. Maybe when I was a student in pediatrics, that might be the only time. So, Kelly, if I'm working for a regional hospital, critical access hospital out in the middle of Nebraska, pretty budget limited, what would be the best use of my money? As far as product purchase for the run-of-the-mill patient, I can't buy it all. I know I can't buy it all. What's the first, best, most versatile piece of equipment?
Friction reducing devices. They could be slide sheets, they could be a turning and positioning system. It's something that reduces friction, so it takes away that extra work that the staff is doing, and it's something that can be used in the beds. There's a number of products out there that will serve as not just a turning and positioning device, but also there's an incontinence pad over it, so it'll be multi-purpose. And the bottom line is that, as we discussed, these injuries are happening in the bed. And if that's what you're looking to do, is decrease staff injuries while increasing the compliance with turning and positioning, then you need to start looking at these products. For instance, EHOB's got a line of products. We've got BAM. A BAM is a sheet that is a friction reducing device that's got some really ergonomically correct handles. It's sized nicely for the patient and it has a really comfortable top. Climate is maintained in this incontinence pad on top, so it's actually quite comfortable for the patient. And while the patient's being moved, the patient is now being moved as a unit, so you'll have an increase in patient satisfaction. Actually, there's something else that I haven't mentioned. Is that we're finding a correlation nationally with a reduction in workplace violence in using safe patient handling devices. Because when you're going to move a patient, instead of you being close to the patient, it's putting distance between the healthcare worker and the patient so that the patient will feel less threatened and we can still get the job done and move them without having them be agitated. You can explain to your patient what you're doing. And it's been helpful, but Yeah, I think I always call the friction reducing devices or turning and positioning systems the gateway to the safe patient handling. Because when you look at ceiling lifts, you're going to be $8,000, $9,000. Sometimes they go for $6,000, but per room. So if you're looking at something that's disposable or even like the air assisted devices, what it's a pump and it's a single patient use mat. So you can issue it to the patient. You're going to have amazing compliance because it's at the bedside all the time, and that the patient will be comfortable on it. And then you can use less staff at the bedside to reposition and boost this patient. And so you'll have better compliance because you don't have to wait till, especially when you have bariatric patient or a larger size or a patient that can't help, you don't have to wait for everyone to come back from break. You can just go ahead and say, recruit someone and say, let's do this. So, in answer to your question, that's my rationale is start with something that's going to reduce the friction in the bed. And then later you can go, once you plant those seeds to the program, which is a full, the whole safe patient handling complement, you can start looking at things like I said, mobile lifts, the sit to stands, because mobilizing your patients is going to also help with skin integrity. And there's lots of studies out there too that how safe patient handling is impacting mobilization. You can't have safe mobilization without safe patient handling. So we're going to prevent falls. So I know I've answered more than enough, right?
No, that was great advice. I really like the idea of the low friction. And not only are you treating friction or preventing friction, you're also reducing shear. And we know that shear is a big aspect of pressure injury development. So a product that's that simple. I'm amazed at the relationship to violence, but I can envision, and Charlotte, I'm going to ask you to verify for me. I can envision a demented, now delirious patient who I need to turn. In fact, I think it's happened more than once. And I go at them, and even though I explain it to them, their delirium prevents them from understanding. And to them, I'm attacking them because I'm grabbing them and taking the sheets off and doing all of that stuff. Charlotte, I see you shaking your head. The audience can't see that, but you agree with me, right? That I can see the connection to reducing patient violence.
Most definitely, I'm an avid user of many safe patient handling devices, and some of them from the EHA product line, some of them from other vendors. And it does it. You go in and you have a device already underneath them. It meets them at the shoulders to below, the mid-popliteal area. You're not trying to unravel a bunch of bath linens that are wrinkled and uncomfortable. You can go in and with ease, they're not being tugged on and jerked up in bed. It's a very soft, smooth gliding up in bed, up and over towards me is a very simple gliding one, two, three step. The patient doesn't feel like they're being jerked around. We have that reduction of friction. We have that reduction of shear. And there's simple products, and there's products now that are so integrating the pressure injury prevention and safe patient handling that there's lift compatible products now that are like EHOB's BAM device is also lift compatible. So if you have an air transfer device, we blow the patient up. But now I need to get that patient out of bed and into the chair. I don't have adequate staff, or the patient's not stable enough. I can now use that same turning and positioning sheet, connect it to my overhead lift, and take the patient out of bed into the chair. And I protected myself. I protected the patient's skin, and I've used one device that belongs to that patient that can travel with that patient across the care continuum that protects every staff member and continues to protect that patient's skin for pressure injury prevention and safe patient handling. So there's really great products out there that are starting to marry these two initiatives so we can stop playing whack-a-mole with at least two of our initiatives. A lot of the products, there's a lot of pushback about layers of linen. We know as WOC nurses and pressure injury prevention, evidence-based practice, no more than three layers of linen, microclimate management, all of the things that we talk about in pressure injury prevention. And these products do really meet the needs of those just super important initiatives from the beginning. They're compatible with low air loss surfaces. So if you have a patient on a low air loss surface for microclimate management, these products do not stop the airflow to help keep our patient's skin dry and all of the basics that we know about pressure injury prevention and the things we think about when we add layers of linen. these companies have really, and EHOB has really looked at keeping microclimate management, safe patient handling, and pressure injury prevention, and developing products that meet all of the needs.
That's great. Well, I know we're at the end of our time, but do either of you have a story of how you figured out where safe patient handling and pressure injury prevention come together as a perfect duo? Anything come to mind?
It's for me, it's been a 20-year journey with just interacting with patients. And my aha moment for me was the story I shared earlier about getting the very early turning and positioning devices in my facility, knowing I wanted them for pressure injury prevention, but trying to sell them to the facility because we had to really make pennies count. And we knew the initiatives, we knew the reporting guidelines, but we didn't have the products and getting that. So for me, that was my very first interaction, was just championing what was not even considered a safe patient handling device back in the early, 2010, 2011, but championing it for that, for both needs that I saw back then. So for me, that's where my journey started.
That's great. Well, I want to thank our two guests today, Kelly Moed and Charlotte Lisco, for sharing an uncommon combination, but yet it should be obvious to all of us that turning patients in bed can lead to injury to you and to the patient. And so safe patient handling is crucial.
Thank you very much, Dr. Black. It's been an honor.
Thank you so much.
Well, let me stop and thank my two guests today. You guys were great, great discussion of safe patient handling and pressure injuries. I also want to thank the EHOB company for sponsoring this. EHOB has been a longtime supporter of NPIAP, and we see that at NPIAP. This time, you get to see their support of us. And finally, I'd like to thank Courtney Smith. She is the wizard that puts all these together and gets them launched. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.